This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration blends classroom learning with extensive field education, guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work. Inspire change. Shape the future. This WBEZ podcast is supported by The Auditorium, presenting Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater, April 24th through the 26th. Experience the power, passion, and athleticism under the direction of newly appointed Artistic Director Alicia Graf Mack, plus five Chicago premieres showcasing the bold innovation and artistry that have made Alvin a global cultural treasure. Tickets at auditoriumtheater.org.
Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Before we get to our conversation on the importance of Trans Day of Visibility in Chicago, I want to take a moment to remind you that you can hear a rundown of the latest stories happening here in our area at the very end of this podcast. Now let's turn to the conversation that you clicked on. Here in Chicago, Transgender Day of Visibility isn't just a moment. It's a movement that you can see and feel across the city. It shows up in packed open mics, basketball tournaments, and in spaces designed for care and connection. Trans Day of Visibility is an international holiday centering around honoring trans, non-binary, and gender non-conforming people and their joy, their resilience, as well as their right to self-determination. In this next conversation, we'll hear from trans advocates about what celebrations look like this year and why this day continues to matter. At the table was Zahara Bassett, who's executive director of Life is Work, which provides resources to empower trans and queer Chicagoans. Shannon Lynn Parker, who's CEO of Equality Illinois, an advocacy organization defending LGBTQ+ civil rights. And Troy Taylor, founder of TransMask Society of Chicago, which organizes social events across the city. Shannon started us off by sharing the history of Trans Day of Visibility. Here she is.
So we know that Trans Day of Visibility is a juxtaposition to Trans Day of Remembrance. And if you all know how Trans Day of Remembrance started, it started because Rita Hester was left out into the streets to die. And what we know is this. We got so tired of the long list of names in memoriam that we say, well, what about those who are living? What about those who are present? What about those who are still active and breathing amongst us? Mm-hmm. And we wanted to lift those individuals up too. So here we have Trans Day of Visibility, right?
You have Trans Day of Visibility in the spring and Trans Day of Remembrance, as you just
that's
walked us
correct.
Through. That's in the fall.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
Zahara, tell me what visibility means to you.
Oh my God. Visibility, it means liberation. It means that you can live authentically who you are born to be. And I think that's what we collectively fight for every day, for to show people that you shall be visible, right? And mm-hmm. you shall authentically stand on the moral grounds that you were born on earth, you know, to present.
Yeah. Troy, visibility, what comes to mind? What does it mean personally?
A core value that being trans has taught me is authenticity. Mm. And I've known my entire life who I am. And it takes more willpower, more inner work than I think the average person realizes that a trans person has to go through to reconcile with themselves of who they are and then make that realization and live that day in, day out, 365 days a year. And me walking down the street, me going into a bar, just being myself, my full authentic self, mm-hmm. is not only empowering my younger self, but the hundreds and thousands of trans young people that will come after me. And that's mm-hmm. what visibility is important.
What else can you tell me about that inner work?
You really have to just look yourself in the mirror and realize this is the man, this is the woman, this is the person that I am meant to be, and really drown out the naysayers, because we all know there's a lot of them out there. But I have never found more pride, more self-confidence in myself than living my full life as a trans man.
Mm. Beautiful. Shannon, visibility.
Well, I'll say this, is that we've seen a lot of visibility over the past 10 years, right? Transgender Tipping Point. We saw that beautiful Time magazine cover with Laverne Cox.
Mm.
But right now, visibility comes with a bit of being targeted, right? Visibility without safety is rather stale.
So it's coming with a cost.
Coming with a cost. But that is exactly it, right? Is that visibility says, no matter the cost, I am so anchored. My authenticity is so uncompromising that I'd be willing to lay down my life for it, because to be inauthentic in of itself is a death. Mm. So I pick my poison, if you will, and I choose to be visible, because either which way, it means death for me to not be.
And I have to want to add, visibility without justice is not just enough.
Mm-hmm. One more time.
Visibility without justice is not enough.
We got to mention, trans rights are under attack across the country.
That's right.
The Supreme Court just moments ago struck down Colorado's ban on LGBTQ conversion therapy for kids. In February, the Kansas state legislatures invalidated driver's licenses and birth certificates for people who changed their gender markers. What is on your heart when you hear me say things like this? And knowing March 31st is Trans Day of Visibility. Mm-hmm. Troy, I'm looking at you.
It lights a fire in me. Truly. It is so easy to get down in despair and really ruminate over everything that's happening right now. But it lights a fire because...
And I'm going to say, when I said the Supreme Court news, I saw a look of surprise on your face, but not surprised.
Exactly. It's the times. It's the times. We are the current hot topic in the tabloids. But like I said, that fire is for that 16-year-old in Ohio who is closeted and is going on YouTube looking up what other trans folks look like in the world. And if I stop that fight, if I don't be loud and try to do everything in my power to try to rectify and try to be just, like I said, visible, you know, what hope can that youth have?
Mm. You founded Trans Mask Society.
I did.
Right? Why did you do that?
I wanted to make a meeting place where trans mask and trans men folks could come together and make connections, make friendships. You know, in these current times, we need to come together. We need to know who our neighbors are. We need to know who's in our community just like us, who thinks like us and has that same experience. And I've brought so many different like-minded folks together in places that, you won't normally see a group of 50, 60 trans guys. And I think there's some beauty in being able to take up that space, regardless of what's going on
now. You're coming together. So, you know, resiliency, when we think of resiliency, it refers a lot to an individual reaction to some adversity, right? You're really thinking, though, about collective resiliency with this group.
Exactly.
And with the community building. Talk more about that.
Right. Like, we all are talented folks. We are musicians. We are artists. We are activists. We are blue-collar, white-collar folks. You all come from different backgrounds. And one of the beautiful things that I've noticed with the Trans Mask Society is we all come together and we bounce ideas off each other. Hey, what's going on right now? What can we do to help our neighbor who has a top surgery fund? What can we do to, you know, really just enjoy the moment with each other that will collectively bring joy? And those types of spaces are sacred. And with, you know, the current political climate going on right now, I mean, it wasn't too long ago that bars were being raided for me wearing masculine clothing. And we need to continue that sort of presence and that joy by just being able to be with each other.
Shannon and Zahara, the attacks continue. what's on your heart? What's on your heart? You said we're still here.
We're still here. I say this, that we are fortunate enough to live in a state that, you know, see us as humans, see us valued, right? And we bring assets to the table in rooms that we sit in, right? But it's unfortunate that we are, identities are still on attack across the country. And as I spoke to someone yesterday, even more that's at attack is our babies. As being a person that has grown up, identified as trans at 13 years old. Mm-hmm. No one pushed anything on me, right? And to see that our youth is at attack for being themselves, you know, and it's not even coming from, honestly, their peers. Mm. You know, when we look at, you look at YouTube, you look at these social media channels, their peers are supporting them. It's the adults that's sitting in these decision dictator positions in these states with these ideologies of hate that they were born with from generations that is still pushing this down on the new generation's throat, right? And that's the fight that we're continuing to fight, is being who we are born to be, right? Mm-hmm. And people are, this miseducation that's out there that parents are pushing this ideology on their children. I grew up in a Christian-based household. No one pushed anything on me. Actually, it was against it. So to know that we have a community now, people like myself, like Shannon, like Troy, that has organizations that we are driving the fight, right, for equity, for visibility, and all these great things. And then we have a whole other right crowd over here that's pushing, shoving hate down on people.
Like, yeah. Two different Americas?
Here's what I'm going to say to the listener. I'm not here to litigate whatever your morality, you know, dictates to you. But what I believe, listener, that you are intelligent enough to know is that my liberation is bound into yours. And though on the surface this may seem like, well, that's a trans issue, right? It's not my issue. I'm not transgender. I will say to you as you're listening is that, well, everybody has a gender, right? So ultimately, your care can be nothing but gender-affirming care, whether it is gynecological, whether it is urology, mm-hmm. so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So my inability to access hormones will be your child's inability to access birth control, so on and so forth. But to wrap this up nice and neat, because we are on a radio show, here's what I will say to you. As I've said once before, we're all on the menu, and trans people were the appetizer, but you all are the full course. Mm-hmm. And when you allow an attack to happen to one, you allow it to happen to all of us. Do not allow us to be the distraction for these current occupants mm-hmm. to dismantle the rights that individuals who came before you fought so hard to win, to ensure that you're free. Again, we are simply a smokescreen. I always say, we are the wrong 1%. We are not the domestic terrorists. Mm-hmm. You need to be looking at the 1% that's really causing the issues, and those are those who are up
there.
It's
that moment where it said, look over there.
And you know, and we're flipping this on its head, right? We're focusing on joy, resiliency. We've got activities going on all week, Zahara. You've had stuff going on leading up to today. I want to hear about the drop-in event last Thursday that Life is Work hosted.
Amazing, amazing, amazing. Although I was not able to attend because I was working on something else that we have working on. But I heard it was amazing. We did, we organized with a plethora of organizations, Brave Space Alliance, Task Force, Chicago Therapy Collective, I believe, as well as Paul Mitchell came mm-hmm. and did hair as
and
well.
And Chicago Therapy Collective, it's opening today.
Yes, Chicago Therapy Collective is doing their grand opening today.
And
at
what's
their
that
new
space going to offer?
That new space will offer wraparound affirming counseling services,
nice.
Therapy services for queer and non-binary and queer people. They also have an event happening this afternoon at 5, I believe, for their grand opening as well. And I believe that's on, I think it's 1745 North Kimball. I believe I said that right.
Yeah, that's great. And Troy, we talked about Trans Mask Society and sort of, you know, what the origin story is. But I saw you grin when I mentioned the basketball tournament at the top of this conversation, because I was referring to you.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
You have a tournament going on. Tell us a bit more.
That was actually by Trans Mask T-Mask by Keenan Carpenter. I was able to have a little group of guys together play some 3v3. got our butts handed to us, unfortunately.
Oh, darn.
But it was just such a great opportunity to, you know, highlight trans athletes, which, again, another talking point in the tabloids. But, you know, we, as well as, you know, just living, we are great at sports. And we were able to play some basketball. And Trans Mass Society also partnered with Brave Space, CTC, and other organizations for the open mic that was at book club that same evening, that Sunday. A plethora of talented trans artists. You know, one thing, I've been in Chicago for about a year now. We are an epicenter of just talent.
Welcome.
Raw talent, yes. And with artists such as Jennifer Femme, DMP The Empanology, and others, it was just such a great moment to produce something beautiful in honor of our community.
That's awesome. Some listeners, Zahara, may be familiar with Miss Major Griffin Gracie, who dedicated her life to fighting for trans rights. I want to hear briefly about the campaign that you're launching in her honor.
Yes,
Southside Legend.
So that was my absence Thursday. Life is Work has been in the process of acquiring the home, a childhood home of Miss Major Griffin over in the Woodlawn area. Have been happening for the last few months. We are launching a fundraiser today to fully acquire this home. We have had some gracious buyers to purchase the home, and now we have to buy it back from them in order to preserve this home. We are looking to preserve, put this as a preservation project for Miss Major and house elder LGBTQIA plus and trans people in the home that are re-entering from incarceration, that is currently living with HIV and or at risk, along with wraparound services, offering for workforce development and so on and so forth.
I've got 30 seconds, Shannon. How do you want folks to continue beyond March 31st to see, to continue with the spirit of Trans Day of Visibility throughout the rest of the year?
Remember that all of our freedoms were bought and paid for by somebody, right? Remember that every last one of us who experience a marginalized identity, somebody wants us to be invisible. So whether you're trans or not, you understand the importance of visibility. You know how hard you fought to sit in that boardroom. You know how hard you fought to sit at the Capitol. You know how hard you fought to be living your neighborhood. So again, do not deny anybody else the right. I won't even say the privilege, the right to do so as well.
Yeah.
Full, authentic lives.
Shannon Lynn Parker is CEO of Equality Illinois. Zahara Bassett is Executive Director of Life is Work. And Troy Taylor is founder of Transmask Society of Chicago. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube, but what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by Wise, the app for international people using money around the globe. With the Wise account, you can send, spend, and receive in up to 40 currencies with only a few simple taps. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. Terms and conditions apply. Be smart. Get Wise.
Now we'll turn to the top stories of the day, from property taxes to weather and much more. We sat down with WBEZ Morning Edition anchor Claire Lane and Chicago Sun-Times reporter Violet Miller for the rundown. Claire started us off by talking about that beautiful weather that we saw yesterday. Here she is.
National Weather Service did record a temperature of 81 yesterday, which surpassed the previous record, which was 79 degrees, set back in 1986, and then it was met in 1998. But temperatures now going to plummet to 37 degrees with some heavy rain, some damaging winds possible. So we got a little bit wet overnight. I think that's what you're referring to. I woke up, though, to about 76 degrees.
Yes. It was quite warm. I remember just being like hot trying to fall asleep last night. But I was struck by the lightning that was, you know, the lightning and the thunder. So I knew something was going on that was crazy, but also it was like really warm.
Yes, it was warm and windy, and then we did actually have some flooding a little bit this morning. Now we're getting a nice break, and then the thunderstorms will pick back up later this morning and continue in spots throughout the afternoon. Meteorologists say the main threat for today will be lightning and heavy downpours.
Okay.
But then we'll be back in the 60s, potentially later this week, even the 70s. So the swing continues.
I noticed you're skipping over, I think, what, the 40s tomorrow? You didn't want to talk about that, did you?
Just a little casual low of 37 tonight. We can deal. We always do.
Jeez, jeez. All right, Violet, let's talk about Cook County property taxes. Homeowners in the county know that the first installment of their property tax bills are due tomorrow, and costs are pretty darn high, right?
Yeah, so they're up 182% since 1995, which, according to this new Treasurer's Office report, is twice the rate of inflation. They've grown from $6.8 billion total to $19.2 billion. The Treasurer's Office said if it kept pace with inflation, with wages, it'd be closer to $10
billion. Oh, goodness. So talk about who's most affected by this rise in bills, because I know some areas were hit harder than others, right?
Yeah, and this is something we've known for a while. You know, this isn't new, but, you know, both historically and just in the last few years, predominantly Black neighborhoods on the South and West sides have been hit the hardest. But just some of the numbers that stood out to me, if y'all are familiar with Oakland, the neighborhood just north of Kenwood, up 636% in the last 30 years.
Goodness.
So again, that's in comparison to the 182% overall. So they're getting three times that hit. East Garfield Park, nearly 450% up. The Lower West Side, West Garfield Park and North Lawndale all saw over 200% increases. These are the neighborhoods that are getting hit the hardest. The closest the suburbs saw to that were unincorporated Riverside at 235% and Phoenix at just under 200%.
Wow. So what does Cook County Treasurer Maria Pappas say about why these property taxes are rising faster than inflation?
Yeah, so there's a lot of blame to go around. Namely, you know, some of these municipalities are getting around laws that are supposed to cap the amount that they're allowed to increase property taxes or demand more of taxpayers. And part of that is TIF districts, you know, exploding over the last couple of years, as well as pension costs with schools. So Illinois funds the lowest portion of its schools of any state in the union, just under 25%. And so the schools have to make that up with property taxes. And so those levies have been going up, specifically with CPS, because they're on the hook for 65% of their pensions compared to 2% in the suburbs. So those are really what are driving things up.
Well, folks, you'll want to stick around for the rest of In the Loop and for Say More at 10 a.m. because our colleagues Mary Dixon and Patrick Smith are going to be talking to Maria Pappas next hour, and you'll be hearing more about property taxes directly from the source. So stay tuned. Claire, in other news, there's officially a new boss over at CPS. Catch us up on what happened yesterday.
Yes, so the Chicago Board of Ed elevated its interim CEO to the permanent position with a formal vote yesterday. This is Macklin King, and now the district's permanent CEO and superintendent. Just one school board member voted no on that formal vote. King's three-year contract starts on July 1, and she's going to be paid $380,000 per year.
Okay, up from her predecessor.
That is correct.
Yeah. What are her priorities?
So in her remarks, King said that she has confidence overall in CPS and that it's moving in the right direction despite some very serious challenges that the district faces. We know there's a budget deficit. We know there's, you know, lots of issues with staffing in some schools. King also said that students are showing resilience and that they're progressing, but also talked about, you know, that budget deficit that's facing the district, which, as we know, is at least a half a billion dollars.
You mentioned that one name vote, but any other anecdotes you can give as far as response from the teachers' union or community members on this?
Lots of people speaking out, several union leaders, community members, even elected officials praising King's work as an interim CEO over the last 10 months. She's also a product of the district. She was a teacher and then a principal for over 15 years, getting endorsements overall. Deanne Palmer, who's a president of SEIU Local 73, which represents thousands of those CPS support workers, is hoping that King is just going to be someone that's willing to sit down at the table and, you know, not just treat folks like items in a budget, like a line item, and as really just people, working people in the heart of the system. So we'll see what comes of her. But so far, people are pretty excited and optimistic.
Sounds good. Well, Violet, you reported on a study. This is out of Northwestern, and a lot of academics and researchers work on all kinds of studies all the time, but they don't always get a ton of attention. This time, though, this one is pretty controversial, and it has to do with trans youth. So tell us what's going on.
Yeah, so the study is helmed by J. Michael Bailey, a longtime professor at Northwestern who has, you know, become well known for better or for worse over the last, you know, 20 plus years here. So, you know, the study proclaims to look at outcomes for trans youth, and that's, you know, before they start any intervention. So this is, you know, whether or not, you know, families are supportive if children are given gender-affirming care, anything like that. You know, the study kind of starts before that. But that's not really where the controversy comes in. As I mentioned, you know, Bailey and some of his fellow researchers, Lisa Littman, Ken Zucker, they've been embroiled in controversy for, you know, like I said, decades. You know, Bailey started in 2003 with a book that touted, you know, a widely panned theory that kind of, you know, views trans women as just sexual fetishists instead of people. And so, you know, that actually caused a lot of outcry locally. Years later, there were more studies into, you know, kind of studying this idea that trans youth are part of this like social contagion. They pick up their identities, you know, from others as sort of a fad. And then also, you know, these researchers have been cited in, you know, anti-trans legislation or legislation aimed at taking away, you know, rights or healthcare from trans people. Even in Illinois, State Senator Andrew Chesney introduced a bill last year and again this month that cited all three researchers.
Wow. Yeah. So on a related note, today is actually Trans Day of Visibility, and we're going to be talking in later this hour to a group of advocates who will share some events that are happening across the city to really mark the moment and bring back the joy to the center of the holiday. So stay tuned later this hour for that conversation. Yesterday, Claire, we talked about how Michael Jordan's house in Highland Park could become a museum, but it looks like there's already an update on that front.
Yes, the GOAT. This is an interesting story. So this property was vacant, you know, Jordan's very big mansion for 12 years, and it was scooped up by a real estate executive, paid about $9.5 million for it. At first, he wanted to turn it into an Airbnb, concerns from neighbors, concerns from the city council. Then he wanted to sort of get shares of this sold to people to have stake in the mansion. Then he decided he wanted to turn it into a museum, went before the city council in Highland Park yesterday, and that was unanimously denied.
Nobody.
Some might say it was shot down.
Oh, boy.
So the Highland Park estate will not become a museum. We'll see what comes of this, but that's the latest for now.
Anything else you're following this morning?
Yeah, this is for those who are familiar with the Gold Lady in Jackson Park. It's this very large 24-foot statue of the Republic. It is being regilded. So the Chicago Park District is deciding it's finally worth the money to regild her, and she's going to cost $1 million initially for the first layer, and then more layers to come, which could cost upwards of another $1 million.
Oh, boy.
But at least she's going to be bright and shiny for folks in Jackson Park to look at.
Yeah.
Might be related to the Obama Center.
Oh, yeah.
With an uptick in traffic on the south side. They just want to make sure everything is nice and pretty in the city.
The timing of that is pretty, yeah.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. We're connecting the dots, as we always are in the loop.
That's right. Violet, like we mentioned earlier, today is Trans Day of Visibility. The fight for and against trans rights has played out. We've watched it play out oftentimes in the world of sports, even. You reported on a basketball tournament that happened over the weekend that made room for trans athletes. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, so it was a 3v3 basketball tournament that welcomed, you know, people of all genders, ages to the court. There was a competitive side and a recreational side, you know, and the kind of usual basketball tournament things that you expect, you know, squeaking on the floors with sneakers, basketballs bouncing, that sort of thing. But what was really striking is that a lot of the folks there were telling me that, you know, they never envisioned being able to compete or play in organized sports as trans people. Because, you know, as we kind of mentioned earlier, there's been a lot of, you know, kind of rulings against them. Just last week, the IOC, you know, banned trans women from the Olympics. Only one trans woman has ever competed in the Olympics, or openly trans woman. In 2021, she went home without a medal. So
must mean a lot for them.
Absolutely. Yeah. A lot of them were just, you know, excited to be able to get into that again. They said that, you know, seeing themselves as athletes is a big part of their transition and who they wanted to be when they saw a future for themselves.
That's Chicago Sun-Times' Violet Miller and WBEZ's Claire Lane.
This episode of the In the Loop podcast was produced by me, Linnea Dominic, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in-the-loop. Thanks for listening.